Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Just to bring you some breaking news now, Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez has said that after a period of reflection about his future, he has decided to continue on as the country's leader. Now, he's in power since 2018. He shocked the nation last week when he announced in a public letter that he was taking several days away from public duty to consider quitting. All of this was around a controversy involving his wife. He's decided now that he is going to stay on. We'll see how that plays, and we'll bring you any more news on that as we go through the morning. A little later on, too, we're going to be going to Scotland for the latest on Humza Yousaf, the First Minister who is set to resign this morning. So we'll bring you details on that a little later. Now, we're just over 6 weeks away from the European elections, but outside of Ireland, what issues are at play in countries right around the EU? To find out more, we're joined in the studio by Graham Finlay, lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD, and on the line by Suzanne Lynch, who's associate editor with politico.eu. So Graham, we're going to start in Hungary this morning. Allegations of corruption, they could have wider implications for the layout of the European Parliament. So tell us what's happening there.
Well, one thing we were seeing in Hungary was what we're seeing in a lot of places, which is populist parties are doing well and they're keeping the momentum up going into the European elections. In Hungary, that was true until Peter Magyar, a former member of Orbán's party, Fidesz, spectacularly started criticizing, resigned all his government positions. He wasn't an elected official, but he was married to the former Minister of Justice, who had just resigned because of a presidential pardon of a man covering up a child sexual abuse scandal. But anyway, he produces, among other things, a tape of his ex-wife basically admitting to malfeasance within the prosecutorial system and allegations of corruption. And he's been roundly criticizing the Orbán government, both about corruption, but also about the failure to protect children.
And is he doing well?
He's doing very well out of it. Mm. He's getting an awful lot of media coverage. He's joined a political party which has rocketed up the polls, especially in the last little while. And they're running candidates for the European Parliament. And he's holding huge rallies, largely in Budapest, but, you know, around the country, which are being attended by tens of thousands of people.
Okay, that's extraordinary, because you would imagine voters look at this and go, we don't want to get in the middle of a messy divorce here. But clearly they're listening to his message. He's not without a controversial background, too.
No, I mean, his ex-wife, who, again, prior to this all breaking, was the leading candidate for the European Parliament for Fidesz, has accused him of domestic violence, and the allegations are very, very serious, and that she was just saying what he wanted to hear to protect herself. She's even somewhat bizarrely suggested that he faked his own suicide and then drove off when the paramedics arrived. So it's a very sort of fraught public relationship, but it's gaining real traction in Hungary, which, again, has, you know, Orbán's been in power for a long time. There are a lot of issues in Hungary, and maybe Hungarian voters were ripe for a change at this point.
So then how could this influence what we're going to see happening in Europe then?
Well, the key thing is Orbán's party was in the European People's Party, the biggest grouping in the European Parliament, but left in 2021. So they currently have 14 MEPs, and they might gain some. That's why Magyar's cutting into that is important, because they're unaffiliated and they're being courted by the extreme right-wing identity and democracy grouping. There are problems with them getting into the less extreme right-wing conservatives and reformists. But if they jump into one of these groupings, that's a big boost to that grouping. And what we're probably going to see is a real battle for the top grouping amongst the European People's Party will probably still have more voters. But if the conservatives and reformists and the identity and democracy could work together or join up even, they could be the largest grouping.
Okay, and Suzanne, to come to you on this is really important, because this is going to change the face of how Europe looks on a political level should this happen, as Graham has described.
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing in the polls is that people are expecting an increase in support for more right-wing parties and coming from across Europe. And we see this all the time in European elections. They happen every 5 years, that there is an element of a protest vote, that people may give their vote to a candidate that they might not vote for in their own domestic political situation. And we've had examples of people like Nigel Farage and Marine Le Pen anti-EU candidates who actually have made their career by getting elected to the European Parliament. So what we're expecting is a number of top figures on the right to be making inroads in this election. And that would change the shape of the Parliament, because these different political groups there, that have just been mentioned, they have a lot of power when it comes to shaping EU legislation. They would also then have an impact on when the commissioners are picked by each country. They have to appear before the European Parliament and being grilled, including whoever's going to be the head of the European Commission. And we expect that to probably be Ursula von der Leyen. So this rightward shift would have an impact on European politics for the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if we have this swing to the right, if what we're seeing in the polls is borne out, does that mean that Ursula von der Leyen's desire to remain on comes under threat?
Well, I think a betting person would say she will be re-elected, but reappointed. She does need the support, though, of the Parliament. And it's more that if she is reappointed, that she's going to be under pressure from the right. They're going to be looking for something for her support. So we're already seeing this at the EU level, that, for example, von der Leyen has changed her stance on the climate Green Deal. There was a lot of talk about that 5 years ago with one of the signature campaign issues, if you like, of the last election. It's not on the table really at all now. You're not hearing much about it. Instead, you're hearing about defence, improving the EU's competitiveness. And that's because, particularly in von der Leyen's home country in Germany, you've seen a bit of a backlash towards the EU's climate policies from business in particular in Germany, but also from farmers around the continent. So I think there is an element of a lot of parties across Europe not wanting to highlight that for fear that it will drive voters away. And I think another aspect we're going to see probably is a dampening of support for green politicians across Europe. Again, the polls, we don't know, but they are suggesting that they did well the last time, but that these green parties across Europe will not get the same level of support that they may have done 5 years ago.
Okay, so very profound policy and emphasis implications here. Graham, let's take another country. We'll look at Slovakia now. What issues are at play in Slovakia?
So Slovakia is very, very interesting. I mean, just as sort of the EU breathed a sigh of relief at Poland going back to a more pro-EU party, Robert Fico was elected in Prime Minister of Slovakia. And he and Orban, you know, historically, Hungary and Slovakia have not gotten along. But he and Orban have really had a rapprochement, because Fico is basically trying to replicate the Orban regime in Slovakia. He resigned in 2018 after the murder of a journalist, and his fiancée, Jan Kuciak, was linked to people close to his Smer party. He and many of other figures are possibly under investigation for corruption. And so he's trying to dismantle the sort of rule of law in Slovakia, but also control the media, just the way Orban has as well. Mm. In that way, he's clashed a lot with the EU. He was elected on almost a pro-Russian ticket, an anti-aid to Ukraine ticket. And so he's clashed a lot with the European Commission over that.
So that is seen as one of his electoral strengths, is it? His pro-Russia stance.
Yes, and that's what got him elected. And he's moderated a little bit after visiting Ukraine, but that is his electoral strength. Mm-hmm. And again, despite being elected a little over a year ago, he has been quite popular. His henchman, you know, who replaced him when he resigned as prime minister in 2018, Peter Pellegrini, has just been elected president, which was another one of the possible breaks on his attempt to reform the legal system in Slovakia. And again, like Orban, you know, he's unaffiliated. Smer was suspended from the Socialists and Democrats before their coalition with another ultra-nationalist party. So there's not as many MEPs in play, but if he does well, you know, those could be available to the Identity and Democracy group as well.
Suzanne, that must clearly be a concern going into this election as well. You know, if there is an increase in the number of people elected who have a pro-Russian feeling and pro-Russia policies, that's going to change how things look too.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, the war in Ukraine is obviously a central issue for Europe. Everything from farming and agriculture policy, because we've seen some protests about Ukrainian products entering the EU market, then the whole question of enlargement, should the EU admit Ukraine to the bloc? This is going to be one of the central questions for Europe over the next 5 years or so. So far, I mean, generally, the EU has been obviously behind Ukraine. It signed off on that huge aid package back in February. But you do have some voices who are opposed to it. You know, as Graham said, that Fico in Slovakia, Orban, and Hungary really have come out strongly against further aid for Ukraine. And this matters because in a lot of EU policy, when it comes to some of the bigger questions, you know, countries can have a veto over this. You need unanimity to decide something. Also interesting is that Hungary is taking over the six-month rotating presidency in July. I mean, Orban has already said publicly he wants Donald Trump to win, for example, in the United States. He sees this kind of right-wing tilt that he favours. And we've seen him kind of strike up a relationship with Meloni, the Italian prime minister. She's a very important figure now in Europe, comes from a very right-wing party, is shaping EU policy, maybe not publicly, but in the background, it's happening. So you're seeing this kind of coalition of the right that's emerging. And depending on how the election plays, we could see that in the European Parliament too, how they pair up, if you like, in their groupings once those votes come in. You could see a stronger right-wing bloc there in the Parliament.
Giorgia Meloni's really interesting figure, isn't she? Because she seems to have, as you say, publicly, or at least on European level, softened her line. Not so at home, though, in Italy.
That's true. And very interestingly, over the weekend, she announced in quite a public statement that she was going to run for the European Parliament. Now, this is an unusual situation. She is obviously not going to step down as prime minister, but she is now going to top the list. Most countries have a different system than Ireland. So she is going to run as the face of her party for the European election. But she will. We know that she won't actually take up her seat. Somebody else will if she's elected. And I think that's very significant because it's showing how much, you know, what an emphasis she is putting on the European election. She wants to motivate voters to go out, her voters, and vote in this election, to make their voice heard about Europe. She has been critical of Europe. She echoes a lot of the language that Orban uses, this idea of sovereignty, that Brussels is over-involved in certain issues. So a bit like the Brexit kind of argument, except none of these countries now want to leave the European Union. I think you could even say that about Marine Le Pen in France. They have all softened their stance. They know that their citizens don't want to leave the EU, but they want to shape it. They want to change it. And I think Meloni here coming out of the weekend and making such a kind of a strong call for her citizens to vote in this European election goes to show how important she sees this and how she is trying to kind of shape the EU from within.
You agree, Graham, that she's a very important figure?
Absolutely. She could even be the kingmaker after this. She leads the Conservatives and Reformists, but she has a really good relationship with Ursula von der Leyen, not least because Ursula von der Leyen is getting her what she wants, which is deals with countries like Tunisia, which impose harsh conditions to keep migrants from traveling to Italy. So she has a very good relationship with Ursula von der Leyen, and she could lead the Conservatives and Reformists to you know, give her a much more secure passage through the European Parliament after the elections. Ursula von der Leyen did not pass by very many votes the last time. So she needs all the help she can get.
That's just intriguing that she has such a good relationship with Ursula von der Leyen. Can you explain that?
I think it's just Giorgia Meloni is really cunning. So she's in Conservatives and Reformists. The Lega, headed by Matteo Salvini, one of her coalition parties, is in the Identity and Democracy grouping. And Meloni has completely remade herself, at least at the European stage, as Suzanne was saying, as a sort of helpful person, as someone who's getting what Italy needs, especially in terms of cash out of Europe. And she changed her stance on the war of Ukraine when she was running for election in Italy. She's very, very good at playing this particular game. And Italy's a really, really important country and a large country in the EU. So I think what we're seeing is her burnishing her image abroad and getting what she wants to do at home.
All right, it's all fascinating. We'll talk again to both of you on this. Graham Finlay from UCD and Suzanne Lynch from Politico.eu. Now, still to come in the next hour, we'll have more on this developing diplomatic spat between Britain and Ireland over migration and the border. Parents feeling the squeeze when it comes to the cost of summer camps. And we'll have parenting advice from Dr. David Coleman. So if you have any questions for David, still plenty of time to get in touch. 51551 is the text number you need.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.